from the USS Oak Hill at its home base in Virginia, sharing a quick kiss with her partner. I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and we're going to enter into a couple of great discussions today, I think, on the radio broadcast. First of all, we're going to speak with Warren Cole Smith from World Magazine, and we're going to talk with him about the review of 2011. Here we are now coming to the final few weeks of 2011, so it's time for us to look back over this year and to reflect upon what has actually taken place throughout 2011. I think that this is a very healthy thing for us to do as Christians, first and foremost, that we should reflect back upon what has taken place this year. In fact, I was just thinking the other day, my own congregation, I encouraged them that for the first time in my lifetime, anyways, we are now able to see and have recorded many of the things that we were interested in and talked about during much of 2011 throughout the whole year. And that's a result of things like social networking or Facebook and Twitter and these types of things. I encourage the people in our congregation to actually go out and look at their status posts for all of 2011 and then to ask themselves, you know, some questions, some diagnostic questions about the things that were posted there. So I think that this is a very healthy thing for us to do as Christians, and I think as Americans as well, that we should stop for a moment and just review. Things are happening so quickly. I often think about the words from the well-known classic, The Wizard of Oz. And when Dorothy is standing there and people are coming and going, she says, "My, people come and go so quickly around here." Well, it seems that way as we look at what took place in 2011. It's hard to keep up with everything that has taken place. And so I think it's good for us to stop for a minute, remember what happened at the very beginning of 2011, what set the tone, and then to visit what actually happened throughout the year. We're going to do that in just a moment with Warren Cole Smith from World Magazine. Secondly, on the second half of the program today, I'm going to be speaking with Michael George again from Strong America Now. Michael George, you may remember, he's the fellow who created the Lean Six Sigma process, which is a process of evaluating where economic waste is taking place. And he has advocated applying the principles of Six Sigma to the problems that we face as a nation. Now, he has, I know that Newt Gingrich, the GOP presidential candidate, former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, has spoken often about Strong America Now and says that he will implement a number of the things that Michael George advocates. But Michael George has got a broader scope than just Newt Gingrich. He actually does a deficit plan. He evaluates some of the deficit plans of all of the GOP candidates. And I saw that a press release came across my desk that said that Romney's deficit plan earns a D, that the grassroots group, Strong America Now, has rated the GOP candidates, and specifically Mitt Romney out of the GOP candidates has received a D for his efforts to in his deficit plan. So I want to ask Michael George about that and get him to tell us why he received a D according to their record. So I think that'll be interesting in the second part of the program. Let's go first to Warren Cole-Smith. Warren, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
It's great to be with you again. Thank you so much for having me.
Warren, looking forward to reading through. I haven't received, probably will a little bit later on today, but I haven't received my actual print copy of World Magazine yet, but I saw that it deals with this subject of looking back over the new year. I gave a little bit of introduction there. Your thoughts on, obviously, as being involved with World Magazine and choosing this to be the topic of this issue, I would imagine that you feel that this is a very healthy process for us to go through as well.
Well, I do. You know, it, looking back is often a great way to learn some lessons and to see not only what happened, but the consequences of what happened, because that's really how we learn. That's how we, if you will, gain wisdom, is to not only see what happened, but to see what happened after what happened. Now, I will admit that 1 year is often not enough. Sometimes the consequences of actions take many years, decades even, to play out. That's one of the reasons why if you go to the World Magazine website, which is worldmag.com, you will usually see on the right-hand side of the page what was on the cover of World Magazine 5 years ago or even 10 years ago. Mm. And I must tell you that that, to me, is one of the most interesting parts of our website, because you can look back and see this week, for example, what were the biggest stories in the news of 2006 and even 2001, and obviously 9/11 was the big story of 2001, and we commemorated that event this year. In fact, it's interesting that one of the big stories of 2011 was the commemoration of the 9/11 attacks of 2001.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've noticed in the Word of God itself that the people of God, and I could say this is true about America as well, but we have a propensity to forget. And I often notice how often in the scripture that it talks about us remembering. It's an interesting study just to follow the concept of remembering throughout the scriptures. It's brought up very often. In fact, one of the ordinances that we celebrate in the New Testament scripture, of course, the two ordinances being baptism and the Lord's Supper, one of them specifically says that we're doing it to remember the death of the Lord Jesus Christ, the shedding of his blood and the giving of his body for our salvation. And so I think we have this propensity to forget. And I was quite shocked when I read through your article that just how much I had forgot of the things that you folks recall in that article. Like, for instance, you start off in the very beginning talking about that this year politically started with the reading of the Constitution in the Congress. And so I had forgot that had taken place, but what a great place for us to start. How did this work out? Or let me have you start there and work through some of the things that you highlight in this article.
Well, that's right. 2010 was a sort of a watershed election. It was the election in which Republicans took control of the House of Representatives, not of the Senate, but of the House of Representatives. And the new Republican majority, when they convened on January 6th, decided that their first official action would be to read the United States Constitution. And the Republicans who are now in control of the House did that as a symbolic action to say that that following the Constitution, that putting the Constitution first and foremost, was going to be a goal of theirs for the year. Now, you can argue whether that actually happened or not. I will leave your listeners to make that decision for themselves, Kevin. But mm-hmm. I do think it was an important symbolic action. And interestingly enough, as near as we can tell, it was the first time that the Constitution in its entirety had ever been read on the floor of the United States House of Representatives. I thought that was interesting, too.
Yeah, unfortunately, the event itself was, was spoken about as being almost like a political trick. And, you know, it was just sad the way that it was treated. I thought it was a great way to begin if they were serious about it, like we're saying. We never heard much more about it after that point, unfortunately. But I thought that the concept of doing that, I would like to see that become a regular staple of the opening of every Congress every year, should be that they should start with the reading of the Constitution itself. Because I think I made a joke. I was at one of the Tea Party events, and I had actually obtained from the Heritage Foundation, sent me copies of the Constitution to give out. And so I had thousands of copies of the Constitution. And I was going around handing them out to the people that were in the crowd. There were a couple thousand people in the crowd. So, and it was interesting how many people were running up to me and saying, hey, can I get a can I get an extra copy? I've got some family members that would love a copy of this. So it was a fun activity. I had a blast. But as I was handing them out, I said, here, you may want to read this. I said, apparently not many people in Washington have read this particular document, so you may want to get up on it. So, but I think it was a great, great event. Something happened shortly after that that kind of has set the tone, and this is that the economy very quickly became the story and is still the story as we get to the end of 2011 here. Tell us what you remembered and wrote about in the article related to the economy.
Well, that's right. You know, the economy has been a huge story for the entire year, and I guess you could probably even go back into last year and say that the economy was one of the big stories of last year. In fact, ever since 2008, whenever we had the financial industry meltdown, in which, threw us into another recession that we've just, we're now officially out of, though a lot of people are still very concerned about the economy. And, the economy has just been a story all year. We've not only had big stories here in the United States, we've had the foreclosure crisis in the housing industry. We've had the financial services industry, which melted down in late 2008, but which is, that meltdown has continued. In fact, just yesterday, Bank of America stock fell below $5 a share for the first time in, maybe for the first time ever, that, as far as I know, that Bank of America, since it has actually been Bank of America, has been below $5 a share. We've had the unemployment issue that has been front and center this year. We had unemployment that got up over 10% at one point during the year. Now, officially, the unemployment rate nationally is 8.6%, so it has come down a bit, but that is still very high by historical standards. And then, Kevin, that's just what's been going on here in the United States. I mean, we could go overseas and look at the crisis in Europe, and that, too, not only has been a huge story internationally, but has had major implications for our economy back here in the United States, because in our global economy, as a friend of mine says, the shin bone's connected to the knee bone, and the knee bone's connected to the thigh bone. And when something bad happens anywhere in the world, it has a negative impact here in the United States. So the economy's been a huge issue. It's been one of the top issues, if not the top issue, in all the polls that have related to the 2012 presidential campaign, and I don't think anybody doubts that the economy is going to be the defining issue for the presidential campaign in 2012. I think a lot of people believe that, in fact, a second term for Barack Obama probably hinges more on the economy than it hinges on Iraq or Afghanistan or any moral or social issue. Now, we could argue whether that should be the case, but I think in the minds of many American people, it certainly will be the case. And if the unemployment continues to drop and the economy gets a little bit better over the course of the year, Barack Obama will probably have a better chance of getting reelected. And if not, then not for him as well.
Mm-hmm. And even beyond that, it seems to be the issue that is even dividing the GOP as well, right? We've got the Tea Party wing within the GOP, and then we've got the old guard there within the GOP, and they seem to be, even this past week, we saw it again, they seem to be at odds exactly how to address issues related to spending and the economy and so forth.
Well, that's right. The Tea Party movement, of course, is taking a much stricter line in saying no new taxes and dramatic spending cuts. And they're not as satisfied with, in fact, they're not satisfied at all with the incremental approach that some in the Republican Party seem to be happy with, and they're certainly not happy with the approach that the Democrats seem to be taking, which is that which is to solve the deficit by increasing taxes.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a number of news stories that were huge news stories early on, but that have kind of faded in, you know, some of the limelight that they had originally. For instance, you talk about the Gabrielle Giffords case, of course, with the assassination that left six people dead. That was obviously a huge and an important story that was covered. But it also, it seemed to set the tone a little bit for trying to once again speak about the civility of discussions that take place in Washington. How did that all play out?
Well, you're right. The Gabrielle Giffords was severely injured, not killed, but six people, as you said, Kevin, were 14, were injured, including Representative Giffords. And in the aftermath, especially in the days and the first couple of weeks in the aftermath, I think it was that event was so horrific and so tragic that it became very sobering to people on both sides of the political spectrum, and caused some to realize that that our politics had become extraordinarily polarized. Now, I will also say that I think that many people on both the left and the right, but I think, you know, if you'll forgive me, I will maybe expose my bias a bit by saying that I think more on the left used this to score political points. They somehow tried to blame this assassination attempt on conservatives.
Yes.
Because Gabrielle Giffords happened to be a Democrat. And that was I think that was wrong, and I think that kind of talk pretty much got squashed early on, but it did create, a national conversation for a few weeks, maybe a couple of months, about the need for civility in politics. And I will have to say, too, that two of the great moments of 2011 also related to the Gabrielle Giffords assassination attempt. One was when President Obama went to Arizona and gave a beautiful speech at a memorial service in Arizona that even many on in the Republican Party and on the conservative side of things acknowledged as being a great speech. And then later in the year, when Gabrielle Giffords was actually able to walk under her own power onto the floor of the House of Representatives, and she got a standing ovation from the members who were gathered there, and that was one of what you might call the feel-good moments of the year, to see that while she's not 100% backed by a long shot, she was on the road to recovery and showed a lot of passion and a lot of perseverance in order to just get to that point.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, that was I totally agree with you. The highlight there, and I do remember that speech and Charles Krauthammer and others commending the president for a speech. Unfortunately, he didn't seem to live by what he said in the speech very long. I think the incivility then popped its head up, reared its ugly head there shortly thereafter. And ever since then, there have been this class warfare, which I think, genders the type of imagery and the type of statements that are made about the Republicans by the left are really uncivil. So I think obviously it's going to take more than a speech, and we saw that played out throughout 2011 as well. One of the things that I thought that was very interesting as well that you highlighted here was the unrule of law. The most egregious case, I think, well, two of them, was the Planned Parenthood case, where it appears that documents were destroyed and Kathleen Sebelius was not going after that or doing something about it in a more aggressive manner. And then secondly was the DOMA case, where all of a sudden the administration just says it's no longer going to defend DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, which is just unthinkable that the leading law enforcement people in the country would say, well, this is one law that we're not going to aggressively defend. Talk about those two cases, if you would, please.
Well, they're both extraordinarily important cases. You know, it's funny, when I travel overseas, which is not that often, but from time to time, and also whenever I study about what makes America unique in the history of the world, you know, we talk about a lot of things, but one of the things that we often forget about is that we have the rule of law here, that it is not a king that is in charge, but it is the law that is in charge, and that all men and women in the United States are, if you will, subject to the rule of law, and that, you know, justice administered impartially is one of the things that, you know, that gives us our freedom here in the United States. Mm-hmm. So whenever there are compromises to the rule of law, that's an important thing. One of the things that the Founding Fathers did to ensure that there were that the rule of law would maintain itself even whenever bad people attempted to usurp the rule of law was the separation of powers, that where we have a federal, we have a judicial branch, a legislative branch, an executive branch, and they do different things. The executive branch, for example, is charged with enforcing the law and not making the law. That's the legislative branch. But what we have in the case of DOMA is the federal, the executive branch of government, which is, of course, led by President Obama, and justice is upheld there, the law is enforced through the Attorney General, Eric Holder. They made a decision not to defend DOMA. And their job is not to determine the constitutionality of the law. That's the judicial branch's responsibility. Their job is not to make the law. That's the legislative branch's responsibility. Their job is to defend the law. And they specifically chose not to do that in this case. And that has the impact taking into the executive branch the powers of the judicial branch and indirectly the legislative branch. So many conservatives, especially those of us who were in favor of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, were concerned whenever Eric Holder made that decision this year.
Mm-hmm. I'm convinced that decision was carefully calculated. Because it related to the decision to remove the don't ask, don't tell policy from the military. I think that they understood that the real challenge against that was going to come because of the Defense of Marriage Act. And so they basically had to somehow get out of or say that they weren't going to be involved in the defense of marriage. Otherwise, those two things were going to come to a head and going to collide. You can't have, on one hand, the military saying that homosexuality is okay and at the same time defending marriage. And so I think those two are closely related. Do you think the same?
Well, I don't want to question what's in another person's mind and heart. I don't know what their motives are, but there's no question, Kevin, that that is the net effect of what has happened, is that, there's no way now that don't ask, don't tell can be defended using DOMA. And because now, DOMA is essentially, not going to be defended by the executive branch. So whether that was their intent, I can't argue, but there's no question that's the effect.
Mm. Well, Warren, there's so many other stories here that we can talk about. Let me just say this for our listening audience. A lot of organizations at this time of year, a lot of individuals, organizations, bloggers, whoever, websites, are going to come out with a year in review. We see a lot of these take place. By far, you guys did one of the best jobs that I've seen on these things. Most of the time, they gloss over so many important things that took place. And I think World Magazine has really put together one of the best ones that I've seen year to date so far. You cover a number of things here and a number of things from Christian perspective, like the Grassley cases against some of the ministries that were abusing finances and those types of things. So just a number of stories that I think were very important, and I think Warren, yourself and the folks there at World Magazine should be commended for the good work that you guys are doing.
Well, thank you for that good word. That's very encouraging, Kevin, and hope your listeners will go to our website and take a look at those stories. I think there's, I agree with you. It's one of, I only write a part of it, a very small portion of it, and one of my great treats is to read what everybody else wrote as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, hold on to your seat because there's so many more news items that are taking place that we just don't have a chance to go over. North Korea's big in the news. Obviously, the presidential race continues and so forth, and a lot of things happening at breakneck speed. So I would highly recommend people get World Magazine in order to keep up on everything that's taking place. Warren, thank you very much for taking the time out to visit with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Kevin. Great to be with you again.
Okay. That was Warren Colesmith from World Magazine. And I don't say those things lightly about World Magazine. I think that it's absolutely true. They do an excellent job here on looking at a number of the issues. And like I say, the issues are coming fast and furiously, and it's hard to keep up with everything that's taking place, and they do a good job of helping to keep up. It would be a great Christmas gift, by the way, to give a subscription to World Magazine to somebody on your Christmas list. We'll be back in just a minute with Michael George. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.
Families all over are in crisis. You probably know at least one with a troubled teen. Maybe it's your family. Licensed to Parent with Trace Embry offers practical parenting advice from a biblical worldview. Listen Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. and Saturday mornings at 11 on Christian Talk 660. If you can't join us live, subscribe to our podcast via iTunes free. Go to licensedtoparent.org, licensedtoparent.org.
One of the things most alarming to me about today's culture is how evangelicals are responding to attacks against them. Many believe that somehow just having one's heart in the right place is all that matters, that a passion for Jesus and the life of the mind are somehow mutually exclusive. But burning hearts are not nourished by empty heads. We must develop our minds if we are to sustain godly passion and to have a clear message. Hi, this is R.C. Sproul inviting you to the Ligonier Ministries 2012 National Conference in Orlando, March 15th through the 17th, as we consider the theme of the Christian mind. I'll be joined by Sinclair Ferguson, Robert Godfrey, Michael Horton, Steve Lawson, Al Mohler, Stephen Meyer, R.C. Sproul Jr., and Del Tackett. Call 800-435-4343 now to get the early bird rate or register online at Ligonier.org. I hope to see you there.
It's great pizza for a great price. So pack up the family and head over to Stevie D's near Walmart on Woodruff Road in Greenville. At Stevie D's, you'll find friendly faces and at least a dozen pizzas out at all times. Or you can order a pizza and they'll make it fresh just for you at no extra cost. So visit Stevie D's today.
Hi, this is Pastor Kevin Bowling, and I want to take the time to thank John, Ruth, Carlos, and the good folks over there at Stevie B's Pizza for their support of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome back into the second half of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. First half, we're speaking with Warren Colesmith from World Magazine. And one of the items that I was talking with Warren about was the economy, of course, as being one of the big stories of 2011. Obviously, all the way through 2011. It's a big aspect, of course, of the presidential race as well, especially the number of debates that we've heard now from the GOP presidential candidates. And so this has got dramatic ramifications, not only here for our country, but around the world. We're seeing the economies are faltering across the globe. And so it's a very, very important subject for us to think about as Christians, as Americans, about the how do we fix the problems that are facing the United States. Here to join me now is Michael George. Michael George revolutionized the cost reduction and quality control systems with his famous Lean Six Sigma process. A lot of people that are involved in the business community that listen to this program will be familiar with that process. His work also has been done in among the Army and the Navy, and in that work he showed demonstrably that the government can achieve the same dramatic savings with Lean Six Sigma that Fortune 500 companies have and are experiencing today. And so he's now become the founder of what's called Strong America Now. And in his role with Strong America Now, he promotes the economic insights that America urgently needs. So joining me right now is Michael George. Michael, welcome back to the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast.
Thanks for inviting me back.
Michael, let me make sure that people know that website to start off with. It's www.strongamericanow.org. And so if you want to read more about what we're going to talk about today, as well as a number of other things, that's the website to go to, strongamericanow.org. Michael, I noticed that just recently a press release has come across my desk talking about the fact that Strong America Now has been evaluating some of the deficit plans that have been put out by the GOP candidates. And I noticed that Strong America Now gave Romney a D rating for his deficit plan. So I wanted to ask you to explain to the listening audience, he's risen in the polls recently. He'll be coming here to South Carolina in just a short period of time. Why has Governor Romney received such a poor rating from Strong America Now?
Well, first of all, let's take a step back. You may recall David Stockman's appearance on This Week a few months ago, in which he said if we don't eliminate the deficit in the next few years, we're going to have another financial meltdown.
Hmm.
Governor Romney's plan, if you will read it, he hopes to eliminate half the deficit, but never promises more, and some people wonder if his plan will even do that. So five out of the six candidates have signed the Strong America Now pledge. They've all agreed to eliminate, not just cut the deficit in half, and that's why they all get A's and B's. But Governor Romney gets a D because he never will eliminate the deficit by his own words.
Mm-hmm. And so has he actually signed the pledge as well?
He's refused to.
He's refused to. Now, was that one of the criteria that you use in order to
evaluate? It was part of it, but, you know, even if we gave him an F because he didn't sign the pledge, but let's take that off the board. Being able to only cut half the deficit gives him a C rating at best. Look, if we don't solve the deficit, in David Stockman's words, if we don't do it in the next four or five years, it's going to be the financial hereafter
mm-hmm.
of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think we realize that I think many people do realize just the significance of that the economy is now a national security issue as well within the country, and just if we plan on experiencing America the way we have in the past, certainly we've got to do something about this this deficit. We've got to do something about spending. Now, just recount for us once again what you're actually saying. You don't really go into specifically what areas need to be cut, but you're basically saying if they would just apply this process, they can experience, I think it was upwards of $400 billion in savings just by using the Lean Six Sigma process applied to other areas of government.
Yeah, our firm applied this at Caterpillar, Xerox, Allegheny, Eli Lilly, et cetera. We were contacted by the Army and Navy to help them. We did that. I had 150 consultants working there before I sold my company in the Army and Navy. We never found a federal process, whether it was in the House of Representatives, the Army, the Navy, the Coast Guard, wherever, that did not have at least 25% of its spending waste. That is, it didn't do any good for the people who use the outputs. And I can give you some examples of that if you'd like.
Sure, if you would, please.
Sure. Well, first of all, if you'll remember, a few years ago, our soldiers and Marines were being blown up in those Humvee vehicles.
Yes.
Unarmored Jeeps. Yet there was another vehicle called the MRAP, Mine Resistant Ambush Protected, that had a V-shaped armored hull that could get through a mine blast. and people can see this on our website. Bottom line, though, is that they can only produce 5 per day in the Marine Corps facility in Charleston. So we were, Secretary of the Navy put 19 of our people to work over there, training there, all the soldiers and Marines working there. And they were able to increase the output within 6 months to 50 vehicles per day with the same workforce in the same facility. And that means that the cost, the previous cost, was 90% waste. Would you like an example from Medicare?
Yes, please.
Okay. You know, you hear people like the president saying we need to cut Medicare by $500 billion per year, and Senator and Congressman Ryan say we need to transfer $6,000 a year to seniors to pay for it. We think both those solutions are bad and ill-informed. Because if you look at the cost of medical care, the National Academy of Engineering and the Institute of Medicine has published a report that 30 to 40% of all medical care is waste. Would you like an example?
Yeah, I think the examples help us to actually see how this can be saved rather
than... Let me give you an example. Stanford University Hospital applied the Lean Six Sigma methods to their cardiac bypass surgery. They found out that 70% of the cost was waste. It cost $40,000, now it costs $12,000. And when they eliminated the waste, they cut the mortality rate by 52%. Would you like an example of what they did?
Yes.
Just one example of the waste, a small one. Each of the 6 cardiac thoracic surgeons had their own surgical pack, which includes all the retractors, sponges, sutures, etc. that's required for the operation. Every pack was different, completely different. Now, so they got all the 6 surgeons together, and they finally, after a lot of work, got one common pack that immediately cut the cost of procurement by 30% because they were purchasing in higher volumes. But then it cut the cost of setup because you didn't need a surgical nurse to do it anymore. A regular RN could set them up because they were all the same. The error rate of surgical packs going to the surgical theater was reduced to practically zero. That's just one example. But the bottom line is, people die because of infections, and they were able to get people through out of ICU in half the time, and that's when you have all the pipes in you and the infections come in, which are what really kill you. So that's just one example, but that's a 70% reduction. The University of California, San Francisco, has done the same thing with their sterilization process. They sterilize thousands of instruments per week, and they've got that cut dramatically down in cost and better quality. So we could, by just eliminating the waste in the medical delivery system, we could make Medicare solvent without cuts.
Wow. You know, the you talked about applying many of these things to Fortune 500 companies. The government, however, is almost synonymous with waste and inefficiency. Are the savings dramatically multiplied when you apply a process to this to all of the with all of the bureaucracy and layers of instructions or whatever in the federal government?
Oh yes, the Deputy Secretary of the Army kept very careful track of this. His name is Mike Kirby, and he ran this program in the Army, and he had come from TRW where they'd done it. And in industry, you know, for every dollar you invest in Lean Six Sigma waste reduction, typically you get $20 return. So it's a good return. But in the Army, they found out the number was about $100 because there's so much more waste. And so, yes, the answer is yes to your insight.
Do you get some reluctance or some pushback on folks within the government? You said that they did this within the Army and the Navy. I just find it difficult to believe then that after they realize such dramatic savings and such dramatic efficiency improvement, that they then wouldn't just go ahead and apply it to other areas. Why doesn't that actually take place?
Well, the Army and Navy are doing that across the, you know, they've just gotten started, but they've only been at it a couple of years, but they are applying it across the whole Army. The Navy, to a lesser extent, is mainly in naval aviation. But the real issue is it has to, all Lean Six Sigma programs only work if the chief executive officer is trained, engaged, and drives it, and reduces the budgets ahead of time. so that people have a chance to make the reductions. Well, that's why I've worked hard in Iowa to get all the presidential candidates to understand this stuff. 5 out of 6 have signed. That's a pretty good track record.
Mm-hmm.
We're still hoping Governor Romney will eventually change his mind, although it's getting late in the day. And because $500 billion won't cut it. We need a $1 trillion reduction to eliminate the deficit. So, but it's got to start at the top. It started at the top of the Army and the Navy, but it needs to start at the top of the administration. That's the president. This is not something that can be done by Congress.
And we should mention that you have offered to provide that training free to the government. Is that correct?
That's correct. I've offered to train President Obama at no cost through a mutual friend of ours. I haven't heard back from him, but I'm hopeful that he will do it. This is not partisan. There's no party that says we want more waste in government.
Mm-hmm.
That's the nice thing about this. It's bipartisan. You do $500 billion reduction from waste, and then you adopt the bipartisan Bowles-Simpson spending cuts, which was another $500 billion.
Mm.
You've eliminated the deficit.
Mm.
You've done it in a bipartisan fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that super committee, when they came out, the part of the savings that have to be implemented across the board was in the military as well, and a number of people have been saying that those types of savings in the military would just be detrimental to our readiness. Military readiness and security of the nation. Do some of the savings that they are going to be forced to realize, will those come from the Lean Six Sigma process being applied there?
No, waste reduction was never part of the super committee's ideas or thinking.
Hmm.
It wasn't part of Bowles-Simpson. But remember, Bowles-Simpson was bipartisan, $500 billion per year, much better than the super committee ever came up with.
Mm-hmm.
But and the beautiful thing was you had Dick Durbin vote for it. Is he a right-winger?
Hardly.
Hardly. You had Tom Coburn vote for it. Is he a left-winger?
Mm.
What a great place to start, where right. You have a liberal and a conservative agree.
Yeah, they got the agreement, and then they did absolutely nothing with it. They just, and that was, I think, the president's fault. He commissioned them to do that, and then they came back with an answer, and then he didn't follow through and just let it go.
Yeah, it was really one of the best thought-out government reports I've ever read. I don't agree with the tax increase parts, but, frankly, I think Tom Coburn would accept some tax increases to help out if that's what Dick Durbin wanted it a little bit, and I think Dick Durbin has flexed. What a great place to start. It really said a lot for those two gentlemen and the other members of the committee.
Mm. Now, you mentioned that 5 out of the 6 candidates have signed the pledge. What exactly does the pledge say?
And here's the rub. The pledge requires them to learn the method. If the CEO doesn't understand what we're talking about, if he just says, oh, yeah, that sounds good, go do it, it will fail.
Mm-hmm.
In industry, it fails. But in industry, it succeeds every time the CEO is trained. At Caterpillar, Glenn Barton went through 2 days of training.
Mm.
At ITT, Lou Giuliano, the CEO, and went through training. At Alcan, Travis Engen went through training. So we told each of the people, you got to, between the time you're elected and the time you're inaugurated, that's a 3-month period of time, we wanted you to spend 2 days, and by the way, they have to be 2 contiguous days. We can spend 2 hours here, 2 hours there explaining this, and also having people who have done it in the Army, Navy, explain how you get it done in the government. So we would have the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Gordon England, there doing mm-hmm. part of the training. We have the Deputy Secretary of the Army. We'd have Admiral Massenburg from NAVAIR. We would have Alan Entoven, who's a worldwide renowned expert in healthcare waste, there. These are people that understand the government, have worked in it most of their life, and know what the obstacles are to getting this thing done, but they've also worked in industry. Every one of them has worked in industry. So what a great place to learn. Mr. Romney says his surrogates say that he should be giving the course, not taking the course. He knows everything about it. That simply isn't the case.
Mm.
By the way, I'm really disappointed, puzzled. I'm not angry at Mr. Romney. I wish he would change his mind.
I thought it was a little bit more egregious that he is not on board with this, seeing that he has billed himself as being the business expert. And since this is a process that has received such a claim within the business community, you would think it would be natural that this is something that he would bring into the government as well.
Worse yet, I invested with MIT in a company called Preferred Technical Group. It was a United Technologies Automotive Division that I brought to them. We both invested together. It made him we reduced the cycle time of that business to produce parts from 14 days to 2 days, doubled the size of the business because our delivery was so good, and Mitt made $150 million on it.
Hmm.
Anybody ought to know this stuff works. It's him. So it's very disappointing to me, personally.
Was any of it used in the process with the Olympics?
I don't know that. He ran that. I had nothing to do with that.
Okay. I was just curious if he was credited with turning that around, and I didn't know if part of that turnaround may have involved.
I think Bain Capital is a great company. They've done great work. I enjoyed working with them. I made a lot of money with it. It made even more. That's fine. He invested more money. And
here's capitalism for you.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a wonderful thing. Well, let me ask you, one of the candidates that has really seemed to embrace the process is Newt Gingrich. I've heard him mention your name and mention the process often on his stump speeches. In fact, he was just here just recently in South Carolina, just down the road from where we're broadcasting now, and I heard him speak again, and I think he brought this up during that speech as well. Does he really get it, and has he gone through this the training?
Well, actually, Newt has already been through training on a previous process, which is a predecessor to ours. It's called the Deming process, and he actually went to school and studied the Deming process 30 years ago. So I think that's one of the reasons he jumped on it so quickly, because he already knew it. People claimed that he thought it was just some kind of new fad, new bauble for Newt, and that's simply not the case. He's been studying it a long time now. As a 501c4, I can't advocate for any candidate. We are pleased that Mr. Gingrich has chosen to mention us several times and believe in the process. He has said it will be the greatest reform in government since the civil service reform of 1883, which is flattering.
One of the other candidates, we have the top three there. We spoke about Romney already and about Gingrich. Ron Paul is now reported to be doing well in the Iowa caucus and so forth, rising somewhat in some polls. Now, he doesn't seem to advocate so much to cut spending, but just cut the whole department. What are your thoughts on that?
That's why he got a B. If you look at his strategy, he talked about cutting five departments. He doesn't actually talk about using waste reduction. He has signed our pledge. He has agreed to the training. And if he's elected in the 2 days, if I can't convince him to do waste reduction, that's my fault, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think I can, and because he's an intelligent guy. But the if you look at what he's talking about cutting out five departments. We're not doing that. We're saying we could make every one of those departments do their current functions for 25% less money. Slam dunk. No problem. And I think everybody listening to us knows that is the case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Department of Commerce has a lot of sinecures that are just political appointees. They really are. But there are some parts of the Department of Commerce that are terribly important. By the way, the census, for example. We're going to eliminate the census? That is constitutionally mandated.
Hmm.
You can't cut it out.
Right.
So the same is true of all the departments. There is a kernel of things they do that are terribly important. But we cut 25% off of them right off the top without affecting their functions at all, and that is bipartisan.
Hmm. Is Strong America Now closely associated with the Tea Party at all?
We certainly have many Tea Party members, but I'm very proud to tell you, in Iowa alone, we have 25,000 members, of which 3,000 are registered Democrats.
Hmm.
So we have a lot of Ron Paul supporters. We have a lot of Republicans. We have a lot of Tea Party people. We have libertarians. We have gold standard. We have anti-Fed people. You name it. We have right to life. We have pro-choice. It is a completely bipartisan mixture, and that's why we stay away from social issues and stuff like that, because we want all of our members to be comfortable that our mission is save this country from another financial meltdown. That's what we're all about.
Well, I was going to ask you that with the mission of Strong America Now, is it primarily the waste reduction and the application of Lean Six Sigma process, or is it broader than that?
It's broader than that in a sense, two senses. First of all, it's $500 billion from waste reduction, but we also advocate the adoption of the bold symptom spending cuts of $500 billion to eliminate the deficit in a completely bipartisan fashion. We also have four white papers that your listeners might want to look at. One is How to Save Medicare, which is terribly important, and we can do that by just reducing the waste in medicine, medical delivery. Another one is how we're going to eliminate the deficit. Another one is how we're going to eliminate unemployment, because once you get the spending cuts down, we can give tax reductions to small businesses, which create 70% of the jobs. That way, they don't have to go to the bank to borrow the money. They can keep their own money, and they can invest, grow, and hire. And I'm not going to wage war in terms of tax increases for the rich, nor am I going to defend them from either way. I don't care about people that make more than $1 million per se. But if they've got a small business, to the extent they invest in small business, they ought to pay less taxes.
Mm.
The big businesses are moving stuff, jobs off to China and India, and that just isn't true of a small business. That's where the engine of our innovation, that's where the engine of our employment comes from.
Mm. Do you think the American people get it? Do you think the American people understand just how important the issue of the economy is?
Let me give you some numbers. As of February 2011, we had 10 members of Strong America Now in Iowa.
Mm.
We have 25,000 now.
Mm.
I think the people of America get it a lot better than our politicians do.
Excellent. I notice on the website it says that $30,000 is owed by every child born today, that the national debt is putting an unfair financial strain on the future generation, so that every child born today is now shackled with a $30,000 debt when they are born into the USA.
The other thing is, we can eliminate the deficit by 2017, and by 2018 we will generate a $200 billion surplus to start paying down that debt. Whenever I give that message about we're going to save this country for our children or grandchildren, that is the biggest applause line I ever get.
Mm.
That's what people are worried about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
American people don't want tax breaks for themselves. They want to protect America for their children.
Right. I agree, and I see that spoken about very often. Michael George, thank you very much for the work that you're doing there with Strong America Now and for putting out this information. And also, I want to thank you for taking the time out to visit with us today on the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Goodbye.
Okay. That was Michael George. Michael's been with me before on the program, but I want to visit with him again. Again, the organization that he's with is called Strong America Now. Their tagline on that website is no deficit and no new taxes. And so their whole approach, or a major portion of their approach, is that we can eliminate a tremendous amount. I think the actual amount is that they can cut government spending by 25% through waste reduction efforts. We hear a lot about this. I don't know if you remember early on in 2011, I remember the president saying, getting together a number of the folks in his cabinet and asking them to go back and to find, I think it was about $100 million, which is a drop in the bucket, but $100 million of savings within the groups that they were overseeing within their, they were cabinet heads, or heads in his cabinet, so they were heads of these massive departments. And so he was asking them to find $100 million of savings, a very small amount. So there was much, picture taking. We never heard anything about it after that. They probably could find that amount of saving in paper clips used by the government. But here's an organization that is saying, wait a second, if we really apply the right principles to this effort in a bipartisan manner, we can actually save a tremendous amount of money. And rather than the wrangling over which agency is going to be cut and these types of things, we can actually save a lot and reduce the deficit just through waste reduction. Well, it's certainly an interesting concept. We're not people who believe in waste and just, using the resources in this way, especially as Christians. We want to be good stewards of the resources that God has given to us, and so we should certainly take issues like this to heart. We should certainly think about these things carefully, because we don't want to be seen as just being wasteful in the way that we're treating the resources God has given to us. So let me just leave it at this and say that we'll be back again tomorrow right here on the Knowing the Truth radio program to talk about some more issues. Remember this, with this issue, the economy and many others, Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free."
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.
Life-changing teaching and talk for the Carolinas and Georgia. Christian Talk 660, WLFJ, Greenville, Spartanburg, Anderson.